This episode of the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast is brought to you by AdamandEve.com. Yeah! Hey, if you go to AdamandEve.com, type in sex nerd, you're going to get free shipping, 50% off almost anything in the store. You're going to get 3 free DVDs and an extra special little gift too. And guess what? I was flipping through their new toys and they have, I'll just read it for you. Super Hung Heroes, the Incredible Hunk. Smash your bed to bits with the Incredible Hunk. Limited edition collector's item. Order now. Tear your way through Comic-Con with the Incredible Hunk. Oh my goodness. Like, it's violence. But it's like, yeah, it's a giant green toy called the Incredible Hunk. You figure it out. It's 10 inches of pure terror? Tearing? Sexiness, pleasure, depends on who you are and what you like to do. I think it's a pleasure stumbling upon this while fishing through the site for cool things. The end. AdamandEve.com. Seriously though, it's a great deal. Go there, type in sex nerd at checkout, and you'll get 50% off almost anything in the store, free shipping, 3 free DVDs, and an extra special something something. Enjoy.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey, friends. Oh, so much is going on. I just got back to Los Angeles. I'm about to take a super nap. And I'm looking at my calendar and realizing things are coming up. Just so you know, if you're in Los Angeles Sex Nerds, on October 2nd, I am teaching a free class at 8 p.m. I'm co-teaching it with Larkin from the Pegging episode. It's a free class called Suck It, Lick It, Love It, which is basically oral sex for everybody. So come check it out if you're in town. And then San Francisco. Hey, guys. Strap-ons and Boning 101. I'm teaching both of those at the end of October. October 23rd, strap-on sex. It's going to be great. And then October 27th, Boning 101. I just taught that class in its full glory for the first time in D.C., and I just could not believe how wonderful it was. So I'm really excited about that, and I love teaching strap-on sex. It's a ton of fun. So both of those, you can get tickets for them at the Good Vibes website. $20 in advance, $25 at the door. Grab your tickets now because it's definitely limited seating for those classes. All right, that's what's coming up right now. Enjoy this show. I do want a disclaimer that although I talk to my guest about giving advice in the park, I am not suggesting that you go out and sit in a park all alone and give advice to strangers. I am not saying that. Do not do that. It's a lovely discussion about a fascinating thing that this guy has been doing for years now. It's just wonderful. So I hope you enjoy our cozy talk. All right. Consensual hugs, guys. Consensual hugs.
Guys. Hi, Francisco.
Hi, Naughty Monkeys.
Guys, we're in for a treat today because I'm in Francisco Ramirez's apartment. I'm in New York City, and Francisco is a friend of mine who was also a wonderful guest on our monogamy episode that that New York got to see in February of 2013. But you don't get to hear it because the audio totally was broke. But thank you for coming back on the show.
I'm so excited and so excited to have you in my apartment. It's kind of surreal to like listen to you all the time and then have you just sitting here on my futon eating my popcorn.
Wait a minute. First of all, he's amazing at teaching people how to, sex advice, yes, and also how to make popcorn. I now know how to make stovetop popcorn. So you're a listener.
Of course I'm a listener. I adore you.
We're sex educators, so we have a lot of sex educating to do. Maybe you listen to comedy podcasts. Maybe you bowl. I don't know what you do.
I actually do bowl. Thank you very much. and I feel like your podcast has a lot of comedy on it. But you know, when I'm at the gym, I find that if I'm laughing, I drop weights.
That's a good point.
So I can't. I have to. And yours is like a good sort of mix of comedy and knowledge. So I'm like, I start to laugh and I'm like, oh, wait, no, there's truth in this. And so I hold on to the weight. I stay on the treadmill and everything stays intact.
I didn't realize, but you're right. There is a certain danger to... It's kind of like getting like car massagers. That thing that you sit on that can massage you while you drive, you can't get the nubby kind because I think it's against the law because it'll make you fall asleep.
Is that right?
Yeah, because that release of tension in your muscles actually, I don't know if it's actually against the law, but I remember talking to someone about that and they were like, yeah, you can't do that because it's just, I mean, the vibration's okay. But anyway, so danger at the gym. I don't know. That makes me want to be funnier, but
no. Watch yourself. Watch it for all of us gym people who listen to you. We can't follow treadmills. We have to stay. We have to keep it together.
Solid advice. Speaking of advice, dude. So you are a sex educator, and I met you years ago at MomentumCon in DC.
Yes, totally.
And there was a huge buzz in the room when people found out who you were because you just been on the Dan Savage podcast. Was that what? Tell me about that and what you do in the world, because you are a rockin' New York sex educator.
Thanks. It was, I think it was 2010 or maybe 11, but I know that I did Dan Savage's show in 2010. So what I do, the reason I did Dan Savage's show is because I do something called free sex advice. So I go out to parks every week in New York City and I have a chair and a sign that says free advice, relationships, sex, and dating. And people just line up and we have conversations about whatever's on their mind, about sex, dating, relationships, sexuality, sexual health. Recently, it's been breaking up with your partner via Instagram and why you shouldn't do that. but basically anything under the sun. So that's how I randomly met Dan Savage. He walked by when I was doing it at the park. And then I, of course...
No way!
Yeah. And, of course, I had to drop the person that I was talking to. Respectfully, thank you very much. I asked his permission if I could run off through the park, very Ferris Bueller style, and caught up with Dan and then said, oh, my gosh, I just adore you. And then he, like, okay, well, come guest host with me. And I was like, shut up. Not really shut up, but, you know, yeah. So, and then I did that, and then you and I met at the Momentum Con, and people freaked out when I was on Dan Savage's show, I guess.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's kind of, it's kind of how Chris Hardwick and I met in terms of it being a real sort of random thing. Mm. And then it kind of just spun off into like coolness. So.
Yeah. And now we're eating popcorn on my futon.
Oh my God, besties. So yeah, you've been doing that. You have a background in public health. Where did you study or what? Because we have listeners who want to go into sex ed. And of course, I don't have a background in public health, but I care about it. Did you do that as undergrad or graduate degree? Or because you also work at the UN.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is pretty. He works at MTV and at the UN, which is legit cred across the board.
Well, so for undergrad, I actually went into starting to study languages. So Mandarin Chinese and Spanish and did all that. Like I went in that direction.
Get out of town.
I swear.
Ni mang ma?
great. That's great. But I was working in at the Health Services Center in sexuality education while I was there. Mm-hmm. For my master's degree, I went to Columbia Mailman School of Public Health uptown and studied sexuality and public health there. Mm-hmm. Certainly, people who are interested in becoming sexuality educators do not need a master's degree, do not need a master's in public health. But it was kind of the path that I found myself on, and it gave me a really interesting background in terms of the whole. I feel like I can see the whole, or at least try to see the greater picture of public health. And
well, what is it?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. Now I'm scared. But like where we all fit in, you know, where sexual health sort of fits in with the public health realm, and how the different pieces work together in terms of healthcare, health management. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say. It, like the complexities of it all, if that makes sense.
And why sex ed and sexual health services are an important part of the overall public health system. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for many of us sex educators, like, that's our part of our life's work, like it or not, is legitimizing our field, because, you know, so many people look at sexuality and sexual health as just, you know, they equate it only with porn, or they just think it's just, you know, that the, I don't know, like the late night kind of like Loveline thing. And I love porn and I love Loveline. I'm not like knocking either of those, but they don't sort of see where it, you know, fits in with people, like the public's well-being. So that's what I appreciate about the degree that I got at Columbia, is it sort of situated sexual health within the whole world of public health.
Cool. I like visionary big picture stuff. Super meta. I'm into it. But yeah, for me, when you talk about health, and I think that's, I mean, because the sex ed field is so small, and there aren't a whole lot of options in terms of how to get your education or job options, really. I mean, you really make your own way right now. It seems to be like the Wild West right now, which is exciting. But each person is going to have a different path. Mm-hmm. And I find that when it comes to sex, I mean, sure, you know what maybe a young, healthy person is like you kind of know, like if you eat all your vegetables and work out, you kind of know what you're supposed to look like, at least, or feel like. But we don't have a lot of options to know what a healthy relationship looks like, or what a healthy sex life looks like, or a sexually healthy human. Like, totally. You know? So I feel like normalizing and showing up, like, that's part of the reason why I love what I do. Because we don't know.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that we have so many examples of how to, like, get your, you know, your screw on, or, like, you know, just to, like, have sex and sort of what that looks like. And we have, I guess you could say, models of that, like, unofficial models in society of that. All the, you know, Jersey Shore, like, hookup kind of stuff that I sort of work on a little bit. On the one hand, but there are sort of fewer role models about how to be kind about it. You know, I always say, like, in the park, right? You gotta be, you know, like, you could just because you're screwing somebody doesn't mean you have to screw them over, you know?
Oh, that's good. Have you, is that a tagline or a?
I was just journaling this morning and just kind of wrote that. So I'll probably tweet that.
Yeah, do it. Oh, my God, guys. We got the scoop right now. Francisco Ramirez, just because you screw somebody doesn't mean you have to screw them over.
Yeah. I think people really need to be kinder to folks. You know, like there's just so much of like people thinking of sex as doing something to someone as opposed to an interpersonal exchange.
With someone.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Absolutely. So, and I think a lot of that gets lost. And certainly at Free Advice, there is, I get to sort of see that in a way where people are talking about each other like characters in a book, or like, you know, players on a chessboard, which makes sense for the conversations that we're having on the one hand, but we have to make sure that we're treating each other as humans with feelings. You know, each person who brings a story, you know, who comes up to me and says, oh my gosh, so-and-so is totally crazar. Like, you don't even know. you know, you kind of have to, like, point it back at you and say, well, you know,
what are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, what are you bringing to the table? Or what parts about you could be fine-tuned as well, you know? And how are you helping to make this situation better?
A little humility. Yeah. A little turning inward.
Yeah.
Crazar. I'm still like, that's really funny. I like that a lot. So you go out to the park, and you've been doing this for, what did you say, 6 years?
Almost 6 years now, yeah.
Almost 6 years now. And was this like after you graduated in public health and you were just like, I feel like I'm going to go to the park? Or like, how did it come to you? Because I've thought about that, but to actually do it, I mean, I don't know if it's also the fact that as a female, it feels a little bit weird to just sit in a park with a sign that says sex on it.
Yeah.
Although your sign says, free advice from Francisco, relationships, sex, and dating, franciscoramirez.org. it's over in the corner because it's raining outside, and so we're inside right now. Sorry, New York monkeys, about not being able to be at Washington Square today. We tweeted that, but then it was raining. So sorry.
Next time. Yeah. Well, you know, I think, it was kind of serendipitous. I was walking through Central Park about 10 years ago and saw somebody with a sign that just said free advice. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I'd love to do something like that. But if I were to do that, what would I talk about? And I said, the only thing that I really know is about hooking up and sex. I was like, why don't I just do that? But I was totally freaked out, kind of. I didn't know what to expect. I was so scared. So year after year, I would collect one material that I needed to make this happen. So one year I was buying the chairs, the next year I was buying the poster board, consulting with, you know, lawyers and
stuff. Every year?
Every year. I take my time.
Wait, well, but then you consulted with lawyers.
Yeah, I consulted with lawyers, other sexologists, people. And then finally, it was actually while I was at public health school, and we were so much learning about interventions and different approaches to sexuality, sexual decision-making, sexual health. And I said, to myself, I've been sitting on this idea for a long ass time. It's time to take this to the streets. And then I did, because I think where I was at in my career is I felt a little bit frustrated, or like I would hit a wall sometimes. I had a lot of conversations where I would be in a clinic or in some sort of research facility having great conversations with people about their sex lives and sexuality. And then at some point, we would need to cut it off, either because the timer went off, or, you know, they were there for an HIV test and it was time for that, or they were there for their, you know, STI results or whatever it was.
You had a lot of patients in the waiting room.
Yeah. So I found that we were having these really great discussions, but they were under an umbrella of you're here for another reason. It was like the conversation about your sexuality and your sex life was just kind of on the side of everything. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what if we just brought that to the forefront and let people totally speak freely? And that was really important to me, that, and that anyone of any socioeconomic background can really access this. And that's so important to me, because I don't ask for any money, mm-hmm. and I don't accept any. Mm-hmm. And I see a ton of homeless people or people precariously housed with different, you know, backgrounds and means and whatnot. And everyone's still having sex, even if, you know, you don't have a place to, you know, rest your head in this, you know, on a bed every night.
That's true.
Yeah, real talk. So, you know, there's like, I get a lot of questions about like having sex if I live in a homeless shelter, or, you know, if I don't have a place to live.
I mean, do you immediately know the answer? Because, I mean, that's what I think would take a more of a creative approach to figuring that out. Can I have sex at a homeless shelter? How do I have sex if I don't have a place to live?
Yeah, well, it certainly did. And I think since I've been asked the question now a number of times, I have some ideas of what I might come up with. But I, you know, if I'm going to remove the cloak on free advice and sort of let you know how I think of the questions, so much of my answers to the questions come from your own instincts. So if you listen to like 100 of my conversations, the most common question that I ask is, what does your instinct say about this?
That's a good one.
Or if you had to make a decision right now, what would you decide? So I'll ask that of anybody in these situations of, you know, how do I have sex in a homeless shelter? I say, well, can you tell me about where you're housed, and what do you think would work for you?
That's a great first question. I always go to more like, can you tell me more about that? Mm. Or, you know, just asking more information, and then we like brainstorm together. But that's great to early on size them up in terms of, you know, yeah, what your gut says.
Totally.
Francisco, I'm learning.
And then the fun part is that at the end of that conversation, you probably circle around in some way to what that advice seeker originally proposed for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I get to do the fun job of saying, look, we totally decided to do what you wanted to do and what you thought you were going to do anyway. So who's the advice giver now, yo?
Oh, which comes to the empowerment idea. You want everyone to be able to have that trust themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone, I mean, everyone has a story. Everyone has a moral compass. Everyone has an instinct. And a lot of times we know what the right answer is. And I mean, I'm essentially just a giant ear in the park or in the subway, wherever I'm doing this. And in some way, like those, like a shell that you put, no, this is a bad analogy, but you know, like you put the shell to your ear and you're like, I hear the ocean. It's
like, the ocean is you.
Yeah, the ocean is not, yeah, like the ocean is you. Look in the mirror. I don't know. I'll come up with the analogy at some point. But yeah, you know, you had the answer all along. or you had some kind of like start to the answer. Because clearly sometimes people are really off. Like, you don't break up via Instagram. Just FYI for all the listeners.
Is this a thing?
Yes, it is.
Because I haven't been on Instagram that long. This is a thing. And it's been happening a lot.
So I hate to just pull like a few recent examples and say, oh, it's, you know, rampant or whatever. But I have noticed that Instagram is coming up in a lot of the conversations. I see people of all ages, like, you know, 80s to, you know, 18 and younger. A lot, certainly like the younger set, Instagram comes up a lot. And even just last week and the week before, people were breaking up on Instagram. So,
like kissing someone else on Instagram? Or do you mean like taking a picture of a post-it that says, like, you broke up with me on a post-it on Instagram? Like, Doug, it's over?
One was this guy was standing with his arm around this other woman, and it was like everything was hashtag, like, hashtag so over my ex, hashtag take out the trash, hashtag hell no, like all that kind of stuff. And another one.
No.
Yes.
And they hadn't had the conversation at
no,
all.
No conversation had been had. And every, you know, because everything was hashtagged and everyone was tagged in the photo, like people who weren't in the photo were referenced in the tag and whatnot. So it was a very public declaration by this douche who doesn't have the uterus at all or the anything to, you know, step up to the plate and break up with this woman properly. That was one. Another one was somebody texting about a conversation that they had. Mm-hmm. With the couple was texting and it sort of got heated. And so then they screenshotted. Yes, fully. They screenshotted the conversation. And then it was like, hashtag, I'm done with this B and all this mess. So basically, no. Basically, no. That does not need to happen. That's not the way to live.
I feel like so much of navigating relationships, I mean, of course, there's communication. But even before that, it's managing and identifying your own emotions. Like, it's just, it's that mindfulness. It's basic mindfulness of self. Because, I mean, I'm sure those folks aren't, like, there's going to be a point, I think, where they turn around and go, yeah, I guess I was kind of messed up. No, I feel like it might take 10 years. It might be a few weeks.
Right. Well, you know, on the other hand, if so much of this becomes normalized and all your friends are doing other, you know, shifty, shady things on Instagram or whatever, then at what point would you ever step back and say, huh, I don't know if what I'm doing is sort of off? Because if everyone's doing it, then I have no indication that this could be wrong until some rando stranger like me in the park says, get out of here.
I feel like TV, movies, I mean, that's one thing is, I mean, there are like, you mean he broke up with you in a text? I mean, there is that sort of shaming of, oh, that happened to me in real life. I mean, I don't feel like it's normalized in media. Do you feel like it's?
No, I guess you're right.
But unless they're watching Sex and the City, old school or something.
Yeah, I think that exists, but there's, I think for a lot of people that notion, like what you see on TV, what you see on Jersey Shore, these other programs, I just called Jersey Shore a program. Thank you very much.
right up there with Mr. Rogers.
maybe it doesn't get normalized, but in its sort of discussion, it becomes a part of our. It gets at least on our radar, and then where it goes from there is sort of anyone's game. Like, even if something gets shamed in a way, I mean, we see behavior all the time that gets shamed in a way on television and then certainly perpetuated. So really, I think it, you know, comes down to sort of us helping each other out along the way. I mean, I'm not saying by any means that I am the authority on any of this or all of this, but I think we have to make each other accountable. And so when that, going back to, you know, not screwing each other over and being kind to people, when your friend does something douchey like that, you know, you should write like, hashtag take this off Instagram, you know, hashtag no way.
Hashtag don't be a jerk face.
Hashtag put your phone away and have a conversation with somebody, because that's what actually matters.
Yeah, but if I were to see that, I'd be like, oh, snap. But second, I would assume that they already broke up with the person. I wouldn't know that they were being. But okay, now we're just going down the rabbit hole of like, what are people, what? Have a combo. So that's a thing that's come up for you. I'm curious, do people just see you and sit down, or do they kind of stake out and like watch you across the park to see if anybody else? Okay, because I've done this once at a conference called Build Conference, and it was just a whole lot of science people, a lot of real smarties. Build Conference is like TED Conference, but like right across the street. And, you know, for me, it was like a little Peanuts Gang lemonade stand. Mm-hmm. And it was fun just sitting there. But then for the first part of the day, everyone would walk by to the other exhibits. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't sit. And like once in a while, someone would come over. But by the second half of the day, when people were seeing people sit with me, then they started to come over. And by the end of the day, I had like a huge line.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see how slowly people turned and were like, oh, yeah, this is legit.
Totally. I mean, I at this point now, I've seen how all of these different dynamics come into play. And that one's totally true. So if the chair is empty, I look bananas. It's the same thing like if, you know, if you see somebody talking but you don't see the Bluetooth headset, you're like, oh, okay, somebody needs an intervention. But as soon as you see the Bluetooth, everything is legitimized. So it's the same thing. When somebody sits in the chair and they see that I'm not like, you know, producing, I don't know, like magical, you know, unicorns or like telling jokes or like juggling or something wacky. Mm-hmm. No offense to jugglers. I'm actually a juggler myself.
Yes,
I can juggle. Thank you very much. When they see that, then that's an actual thing. Then I think they're more curious. But certainly a lot of people walk by for months and years until drama really hits. And then they're like, psh, I'm going to check this out.
Really? So there's they know that you exist as a resource.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been seeing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of people, even recently, who, because I've been doing it more regularly these days, especially.
Because you're going to turn into a podcast, right? So you've been recording?
Yeah, so we record all the conversations, which is a lot of fun. And people are still really open, which is great. But yeah, more people are coming out of the woodwork and saying, you know, I've seen you for years, and I didn't know if you were a freak. And I'm like, well, stop right there, because first of all, I am. Thank you very much. and then I think I've been fortunate that, I guess, word of mouth kind of spreads around, and people bring their children now more often, and like we have family time, like on a regular basis at the park, and it, you know, it turns into this whole, the park becomes a whole different space, it wasn't my intention, but I'm glad that it was a byproduct, because I really believe in bringing sexuality out from the back page of a newspaper, out from the late night cable television discussion, and really embedding it right into the fabric of our city.
Mm-hmm. And in New York, it's a pedestrian city.
Yeah. So everyone's going to see me. And at first, I'd be really, my first year, I was really nervous if like a family walked by, because I'm like, oh, this says sex. And what are the kids going to say? But you know, I know that two blocks away on Sixth Avenue, you know, they're walking by the inflatable sheep. You know what I mean?
I think I walked by one of those places on the way here.
I think to get out to my house, you have to walk by an inflatable sheep, a nurse's outfit, and something with like a piece of corn. I haven't investigated that one.
Oh, I'll have to check out the corn.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. There's nothing pornographic on my sign by any means. There's not like a giant dancing vulva.
Oh, that'd be cool though. So wait, now I imagine that where you sit at a park bench and a chair, that one person's sitting there, but now you're saying that it'll be a group of people will come over, and then family time. And what does that mean, that the whole park becomes like a little amphitheater where everyone's surrounding you and listening to you as you talk to someone? Like, does it become, so you welcome eavesdroppers to just sort of chill out nearby? And
so this is what's totally fascinating and surprising and awesome. Most of the time, the conversations are fairly private. People are emoting. They're crying almost on a weekly basis. Like, drama gets dealt with in the park every week. But it's a public space. And so if somebody gets close, I generally, you know, won't push them away, because it's not my space to do that. Sometimes people are eavesdropping in a way. Mm-hmm. And I'll check in with the person sitting across from me. We'll maybe lean closer. And then sometimes somebody will just come up and kind of enter into the conversation and say, what are you doing? What's this about? And what are you guys talking about? And then with somebody's permission, we might open up the discussion. And then it's great, because then you have this whole sort of the public weighing in the square on, you know, who should pay, you know, for the first date or all these sorts of things. And that's especially when it's with like younger people, like 16, 17, 18, I get really excited, because then we get to establish norms about dating and gender and all that great stuff.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. It's fascinating to watch people interact because you're the catalyst for great conversation in a community. But okay, do you ever have somebody who sits there and just and like sitting there for an hour, 2 hours with the same person, and then do you have a line, or like let's say you kind of want to run to the restroom, and or like you know because sometimes people just talk and talk.
Well, generally, I'm about to like drop my biggest tip for anyone who wants to do this on their own.
Oh my god.
So, but I first will say that it indeed sometimes people really want to stay there for a long time. And I don't even look at it as like overstaying their welcome because there's no sort of rules around free advice the way that I do it. People just line up and we have their conversation and I check in with the line respectfully every so often to see, you know, who's there and what everyone's timing is like. But, you know, I just do my best. All this said, if a conversation is going on long and maybe, you know, there's a line or maybe I'm tired or maybe I just feel like this is not no one's really benefiting from this conversation at some point, then I will cut it off. And the way that I do that, my number one way that I found is to say...
Oh, drum roll. I'm so excited.
Right? You know, if it's you, we're like, Sandra, you know, the last thing I wanted to say about it was boom. And then I'm giving you a nugget. And that's all I do is sort of introduce it saying the last thing I want to say. And then if they didn't catch the hint there, then the second one is... Well, I hope that was helpful.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then we're sort of ending that conversation. It's clear to that person, and it's time to move on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was like, do I put a time limit up or whatnot? And no, it's kind of a hard thing. But also, people are pretty great when they see a line to kind of, because that's the thing is like, you want to help everyone, but it's hard. Yes.
Yeah. And the line usually forms behind the people. So they actually have no idea that people are walking by taking pictures of them sitting in the chair and that this, you know, there's these people waiting. So it is up to me to sort of manage that. But it's so hard for me to cut off a conversation if they're getting, you know, if they're going deep and they're hitting something that they really need to talk about. I want that to happen. That's why I'm there.
Yeah. Yes. No, that is the reason. So common questions, because the thing is we don't know what everyone's... I mean, of course, it's a self-selecting group. It's people who are comfortable with approaching you in a park, in public, talking about something. What are the most common questions that you get asked? And since now you have a microphone to record podcasts, does that tend to legitimize you or does it tend to push people away? So I guess just tell me that little bit and then I want to get into questions that you get asked.
I don't think the mic freaks people out. I've experimented with different mics over the past year. The setup that we're using now with Shotgun, I don't think puts people off. I work really hard to be a nice, inviting person to my fellow New Yorkers and tourists who stop by. And I think that's what matters to people. In terms of common questions, certainly, I will say this, though, actually. You said it's a self-selecting group. 100% agree. But something happens at night.
Oh.
I know. I've noticed this. When I go out to the park at night and it's darker and there's not sort of people walking around like snapping pictures and it's more people just casually crisscrossing through whatever park, I get different people, different questions. People sometimes go deeper because there's something about the darkness and it just feels like it's just kind
intimate.
Of us. Yeah, it feels really intimate. So that's great. So I'm all about the night these days.
LA is not a walking city. And I don't know if I'd feel comfortable in a park by myself with the sound. Like Griffith Park is great, but it's a jogging park.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to get a whole lot of the city in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how would I do that? Like I want to do it.
Yeah.
But the logistics, yeah, I don't know.
Somebody once suggested Malibu or the Santa Monica Pier, which I haven't done. I haven't done this in L.A., but I know – I feel like those could be options. The last time I was in L.A. Last year, I thought, oh, yeah, it could be possible.
That's true.
Yeah, but it's true. L.A. doesn't have that nucleus or that anything like that.
No, I mean, I could do an online free sex advice type thing. But, yeah, it's different. Anyway, so what are these – okay. I love seeing patterns in human behavior because so often people feel alone. They feel like they're the only one who thinks something, the only one that worries about what they worry about.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what people tend to ask.
The most common question is about asking somebody out. In fact, I hate to put this out there. it's not that I get sick of listening to it, but I get sick of almost listening to that question because everyone walks up with a different version of it. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much of, you don't even understand. I'm like, I'm a freshman at NYU and there's this woman like in the class and she's amazing and I'm such a fill in the blank self-deprecating, you know, adjective or noun. And I don't know how I would ever approach her because she's totally out of my league and she's not interested. Everyone asks that question, I feel like, in some way at some point in their life almost. So that's probably the number one.
Okay. So they think that they're alone and it's special. But is the truth is it usually, dude, friend, gal, just ask them out? Is it usually that's the case? Or are sometimes like, no, don't ask that person out?
95% of the time is going to be totes, ask them out. Mm-hmm. The 5% is they're your professor. Like, no. And the class is going on. That doesn't, you know. Or they're like totally in a relationship. Now, I know that's more nuanced, but they're totally in a monogamous relationship and it's known and you want to be respectful of them and whatnot. Then no. Then don't pursue that. Like, go ahead and, you know, put your eggs in whatever basket. What is that phrase? Or like, you know.
Don't put your eggs in that basket.
Yes.
That's a monogamous basket and they're holding someone else's eggs.
Totally. Literally. And that's those are probably the common questions. The most common question they get about how do I ask somebody out. There are other questions. As you would probably imagine, a lot of the questions are, am I doing this right? Like so many people, especially because, you know, when we're...
He's pointing his finger. No. It's like he cares about this one. So yeah. Listen up.
It's the beginning of the school year, okay? And so, of course, I do this around NYU. So NYU and Parsons and all these schools, like everyone, I feel like everyone 18 always like runs up their first year to free advice and has all these questions. And the big one that I get from a lot of young women is about giving blowjobs.
Okay.
And my heart just opens up because I think so many of them ask the question as if they're doing something horribly wrong. You know, it's like, I have really big teeth like a horse and I don't know if I'm going to, you know, like, you're not Mr. Ed. Like you have normal teeth. You know, it's not going to be end of the world. But I think there's this pressure put upon all people and particularly women around giving blowjobs as if there's this, you know, secret sauce kind of way to give a blowjob, and there totally isn't, you know, pressure, attention, you know,
rhythm,
yeah, you know, keeping things wet and slick for some people, not for others. I remember when I first learned about, you know, giving head or whatever, it was from this like drag queen in the back of a thrift store in San Francisco, and he had this, I know, it's
like a friend, or like he's like, come here.
A friend of a friend.
Okay.
But I was brought to him, like, he's this, like, you know, guru of, like, this kind of thing. Yeah. And I was, I don't know, I think it was, like, 16 or 15 or something like that. And it was like, if you're going to be gay, you've got to learn the way. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I had to learn. And so at that point, like, it was this magical, like, I felt like he was going to open a scroll. And there were going to be, like, all these, like, diagrams on, like,
papyrus.
What did he say?
So
he was over the top. He was all about, you've got to... First of all, you've got to look at it. You've got to just look at it and just know that it's yours. I was like, really? And then he's like, you've got to convey that desire, that power, that animalistic instinct to the guy that you're about to suck off when I'm just sucking him off. Like, it really? So anyway, so he gave me this whole sort of like hands-on, with props and whatever. Mm-hmm. About how to actually go down. But he was really about sort of the everything that goes around sexuality and the sexual experience. So like what do your eyes say? What are your, you know, what is the way that you even inhale the
He was aware of the performance of it.
Totally. He was a performer at night and by day when he was giving young gay boys like me in San Francisco the ropes on this stuff. But it freaked me out on the one hand because I was like, oh my gosh, there's one way to be sexually and this guy totally like knows the way to do it. And if I don't, you know, figure this out the right way, then I too will fall in this horrible pit of gay boys who don't know how to give blowjobs the right way.
There's that fear. I mean, as a woman, if I go down another woman, it's like, oh crap, there's an expectation there.
Right. Right. Especially, totally. I mean, on the one hand, I think I did learn the performative, the positives of thinking about the performance of sexual interactions, I guess, sexual activity. And that part I love. I love dressing up a scene, you know? My hands are getting like wet just thinking about it.
Oh my God. He lubricates through his hands.
I do. Like an octopus or something. I don't know.
Okay. So, that's nice. I love the visuals.
Yeah, lots of clothes were involved.
So am I doing this right? Making sure that people's techniques are spot on. That's important for them. So then do you just ask a lot of questions about like, well, what are you doing and how is your partner responding? That sort of thing.
Yeah. I like to pull through a lot of what they've heard and what they think so that we can either confirm or deny or say, look, you know, maybe there's something more to learn about that. Why don't you, you know, push that. But I really want to make it, you know, the advantage of me to doing free advice in the park to talking about sex for MTV or you know, in a, you know, lecture, whatever it is that I get to be really personalized to these people. So we get to totally go there. These days I'm big into role-playing things out, giving people homework, activities. You know, when I was there last week, we turned sort of the microphone into like, you know, we used it as like a model of a penis. Now, we didn't deep throat it, obviously, because
mics be expensive.
And, well, yes. And decorum, you know, I don't want to like totally taint the city with my, I don't really have deep throating abilities, but you know, whatever. Anyone's deep throating abilities on this beautiful mic, it's just not in the park, not in the park. But
no.
But so we, I'll make it really personal. I'll find out like what are the problems that they have or that they imagine having so that they can work through them. But you know what, I think what's so much fun about sexuality, and I wonder if you'd agree with this, is that there's just so not a right way, and so much of it is just exploration.
There really isn't a right way.
I know. So what are we doing as educators then if we're just supposed to be like, just do whatever? No.
I mean, we're taking away the black and white, and we're providing a buffet of gray.
Oh my gosh. We are.
Yeah.
We are. Okay, buffet.
We're tearing down and building up.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. But, and like letting them build up, right? So we're facilitators. Is that what we are?
We're facilitators. We are, we're so many things. I mean, I'm a definite philosopher, like in terms of how I approach things. I'm a very Socratic method. Mm-hmm. But it's, we just show people like the rainbow.
Yeah. And that's the fun part of free advice, at least, is that, you know, you walk in maybe only seeing Roy, and G-Biv is like just behind this wall that you never thought of. You know what I mean?
You just Roy G-Biv'd this metaphor. It's really funny.
Yeah,
I feel like, I don't know about your own personal journey, but for me, I already was pretty open-minded about sexuality, but beyond the books and the learning, just giving myself permission and being, oh, you know, that's what we are, permission givers.
That's real. Okay, that's real.
You know, it's you get to be the catalyst for, I mean, I was at a little like networking mixer thing on when I first came into town. I just showed up to my friend's thing, and it was just like TV execs and stuff, like those, you know, like business casual people, like everyone's schmoozing. And my friend's like, oh, and she's a sex educator. And they're like, oh, cool. And then it just became this ring of guys. But it wasn't like, oh, hey, what's up, girl? It was more like, so you're a sex educator. What does that even mean? And like, we're guys and blah. And it just became the thing where it was fun because I got to open up a conversation about sex that these guys would never have. Mm-hmm. And they all walked away with sort of this like, oh, men can talk about sex too. And they're not sleazy when they talk about, you know, like, oh, we can be empowered to talk about our sexuality. But that, it started at a place of like, we're going to be playfully douchey to you because that's all we know to do.
Oh, no, to the doucheyness. But yay to men feeling like it's okay to ask those kind of questions. I mean, I actually, this is what I find too. I find this fascinating. In at night when it's dark, I think I get more men. I mean, I definitely get almost, I haven't calculated in a while. I'm type A. But when I was sort of taking note, I would really get about, you know, kind of split down between men and women. But I think at night I get more men. I'm just thinking back in the last few weeks.
Well, in terms of who's walking by, do you have more or are less women walking by at night?
Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's part of it.
I don't know.
But I know that a lot of men walk by during the day, and certainly men sit down all the time, straight, gay, all over the rainbow. But I do get a lot of men like sitting down to really emote at night and have things come out in a major way.
Oh, man. There is something magical about nightfall.
I know.
I want to do this. And I was inspired by you when I heard about it years ago. Do you get run off by the cops, or how does the city treat you?
Oh, so I'm sighing. Yeah, sometimes I do. I do. Sometimes I get... It's just... It's all over the board, you know?
Have you ever been arrested?
I haven't been arrested. I've certainly been kicked out. I've gotten warnings and, like, you know, citations and whatnot.
Citations? For what?
It's really all over the board. So sometimes I get, you know, labeled as an artist, or a vendor is what they usually go after me for. But there's no exchange of money. There's just exchange of knowledge and ideas. But, you know, I guess things aren't uniformly policed in New York City's parks, at least in the parks that I go to. And same with the subway. Sometimes it's because I do this in the subway.
What a neat idea.
It's fun.
Whoa.
It goes, they're interesting because the conversations go a lot quicker because people are like, yo, I got to commute. I got to go back to Jersey. I gotta go Long Island or whatever. And they just, you know, they sit down after. I really like doing it after work because the day, you know, they can shake off the day. But people, and nobody wants to hang out that long in the subway anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And I usually hang out next to the people. It's me and then the people who have the sweatshirts, like, have you found Jesus and are you free from sin or something like that. So it's the two of us lined up around 42nd Street.
Really?
Really. It's a lot of fun. And we say hi to each other every time I'm there. And we're cordial. It's really nice. Those conversations go quicker. And they're really pointed usually. It's like, I got this quick question. I got to get out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I'm inspired because LA has a subway system. Also, you can just go back and forth, basically, if you want to do it for an hour or two.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I usually go for like 3 hours or so at a time in general. Sometimes I do 2 hours. Sometimes I've done like a marathon of like 6 to 8 hours, which is just bananas. But I think it's totally something that people can do. And I don't think you need, you know, to me, what's really important in my work and whatever I'm doing, free advice or whatever, is I always think of, am I doing more harm or more good? And what are the potential detriments? So I think if people are conscious of that, because I just want people to be, you know, as ethical as possible and to be prepared for different situations. Like, you know, I have people, you know, who are suicidal or, you know, in different sort of states who will come up.
Yeah, you don't want to do damage.
No. Yeah. So you want to approach it with care, which you obviously would.
Yeah, I've got ethics and shit.
That was nice. Yeah, but it's totally something that can be replicated. It's just, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And so you just have to be on your toes in the sense that somebody's going to throw you a curveball question that you don't know. Like, I had one recently about a guy who was convinced that his ex-boyfriend put like a voodoo curse on him.
Oh, that's nice.
Right. So we had to talk that through. And me knowing very little about voodoo and how that all works, we had to sort of talk around it, I guess, because I didn't feel comfortable, you know, pretending to know about voodoo. But yeah, I still wanted to do my best job and help this guy out.
Okay, now to flip this, since you did mention about, like, when questions get weird or challenging or you ever feel like you're in danger, like, what are some of the hardest moments when it comes to this sort of thing? I mean, you're opening yourself to all of the varieties of interactions with the public.
Yeah, there are two categories of difficult questions. One is somebody's being, and this only has happened a handful of times because I'm really fortunate, where somebody's being a jackass, mm-hmm. and they want to F with me. And I feel like in some situations I would sort of bite back, but because I'm thinking of safety and I have, you know, even if I don't have recording equipment, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to violate someone's part. Yeah. So there's that, you know, the once in a while, the really, really infrequent douchey person is like, you know, will like even say like horrible things about gay people, or whatever, to my face just to like incite me.
Oh, I see. Just straight up. Like, they don't sit down and then just start messing with you. They'll just, like, walk by and...
No, people have sat down in the chair, had a conversation, and say, well, I think you only have that opinion because you're a F-word or you're a whatever, which is...
You're a friend, right? That's the F-word.
Because I'm a friend. Exactly. Which, you know, which that's obviously a pain in the ass, and we just, you know, let them have their stupid-ass moment and then, you know, continue on to the educated people who I give a rats about, you know. Mm-hmm. That's actually not true. I do give a rats about those people who have hatred towards me or whatever, but I only go so far in our discussions.
I wish there were something magical, like something specific that would make their brain click over and realize everything. Like, what is it that you can say? But it's hard to think on your feet like that.
Yeah.
Like crank calls, like when you get crank calls if you work at an adult. Have you ever worked at an adult store?
I haven't worked in an adult store in like retail. I've worked in adult stores with like classes and stuff, but not behind the register or anything like that. But yeah, I don't know. What I usually just try to do is bring some awareness to like what they're asking about and hope to show them why, hope that they come upon the realization of why they're being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's hard to do, especially in a quick interaction. Anyway, that's one of the difficult questions I get. The other interactions that are difficult are the ones where I feel like somebody's coming from an ideological perspective that's really just, you know, opposite mine. Mm-hmm. And where they're not open to seeing any other sort of way of a situation. So this last one was there. Somebody came up and he was convinced that... that porn was the work of Satan.
Okay.
And that his lustful desires were, you know, because of Satan's work, you know.
Yeah, when religion comes into play, whether it's like, oh, I feel like God's watching me, so when I masturbate or I have a lot of guilt or shame, uh-huh. or I don't have the language or the training around how to honor that religious background mm-hmm. and then also help the person.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know... can be a tricky subject, but I think there's ways to sort of deal. My standard is to acknowledge and not, you know, go counter whatever their beliefs are. But, you know, say what you might imagine, which is, you know, I can appreciate what you're saying. And I know that sometimes people have that belief or that experience. Sometimes other people might look at it from this perspective. But if somebody's just pushing back and there's, and we're not, our only seeing eye to eye is that, you know, we're on different sort of sides of the fence. That's something, but at some point I might not be so helpful to them, you know, especially after a long conversation. Mm-hmm. So at some point, then the conversation will probably end.
Yeah. The challenge when your beliefs create a box and your logic is trying to get out of the box.
Yeah.
But you can't find, I mean, but the belief is, it's difficult when those come into play.
And I'm certainly happy to, like, explore, and I think that a lot of the work is exploring people's boxes and boundaries and what they think are the, you know, constructs in which they live. But I want to be, you know, when it's a culturally held belief or religiously, I do recognize that, at least the way that I see my work, is not completely ripping that apart for people. You know, I really don't think so, because I come into this world with my own perspective, and it's a really liberal-ass perspective. But not everyone does, and you certainly have to meet people where they're at.
Yeah, it's about finding their health, their level of health, where and honoring their background, all totally. The thing. So hard. Make it easier.
I'm gonna try.
Good. Okay, we'll work on this. Yeah, I mean, are there any particularly magical moments or funny moments that have just stood out to you over the years? I mean, I know I'm excited about the fact that you're releasing this into a podcast, because it's a form of interaction that's not available yet. So I'm really glad that you're doing that.
I'm so happy to have your excitement about it. Thanks. Yeah, there's so many stories. I mean, I'm thinking back to Superstorm Sandy / Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of questions actually that came out right after that. I was around right after the hurricane and all. But even through the beginning of 2013, there were still the impact of that hurricane in ways that I wasn't expecting. You know,
like what?
Like there was, I guess it affected people in different ways. So for like one couple, I'm thinking, there's this couple who, like a lot of New Yorkers, were just busy and, you know, knew that they liked each other, but never, you know, hadn't seen each other in a really long time. And then, lo and behold, you know, one of them lives here downtown where we lost all power and electricity for I don't remember how many days. And then the person that he was interested in lived in another part of town where there was totally electricity. So lo and behold, when he has no electricity, he calls her up and is like, hey, I'm totally stranded. Is there any way that I could stay with you? Yes. And get this, he never moved out. Once he went to stay with her during the aftermath of the hurricane, he never left.
Like they just came together in a magical way.
Totally. They became like permanent roommates and then became like a thing, which is super cute.
Wait, so when did you intersect with this story?
This was probably a couple months after the hurricane, actually. And they were telling me sort of after the fact. So I'd never met them until after they had already moved in. So there's stories like that. And then on the other hand, I know
you get love stories.
Oh, I certainly get love stories.
Oh, my God. That's like a whole subsection of free sex advice.
It's so much fun, especially because I have no kind of man in my life right now. Attention, naughty monkeys. Francisco Ramirez is single. It brought people in that case together, but in another case, it pulled them apart because there was this one family that was out in towards the Rockaways where homes were just destroyed. So this sort of constellation of families and people dating each other had to then move into a smaller place and share less, you know, square footage with more people. And that sort of intensity and the kind of tension there made it difficult for them to all stay in the same place. And so they ended up not being together, which is really sad. And actually the mom started hitting on this woman's boyfriend.
Because they were sharing space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was awkward and difficult. And yeah, I feel a little uncomfortable about that, but that's how things go.
That's actually a really interesting thing to me when I think about, what does it take to make a relationship work? And, like, what if you didn't move into a smaller apartment? What if the Great Depression really did hit and you were living in a shack together? Mm. Would you make it? If one of you hits the lottery, would you stay together? Like, if your economic and environmental factors change, how does it affect your relationship? It's an interesting thought.
It is. I mean, so much of our experiences are, and that's going back to public health, so much is the environment, mm-hmm. Sort of the macrocosm of what it is that we live in. So certainly our environments impact our sex and dating lives. And I think another way to think of that is the way that we look at our environments, the way that we sort of where our mental space is will certainly influence how we think about ourselves, our sexuality.
Like our emotional health.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for me, that's kind of bridging the public health and sexual health is thinking about environmental factors and then your own beliefs and your own, constellation of experiences and sort of the morals that you hold coming together. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, the human is a multi-layered parfait. Delicious. Humans are delicious parfaits. Are you hungry?
That makes me hungry because I like parfaits.
Francisco, you taught me how to make popcorn today, which is great. He's a fantastic, a wonderful apartment here. We are super, super fabulous. Oh my God, that was so good. Why was I that person right there who did that? But yeah, that great apartment, great popcorn, butter spray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is so embarrassing to admit. Yes, I use no calorie. I cannot believe it's butter spray on my popcorn because, you know.
I feel like we're at the movies.
Yeah, pretty much. We basically are. I think we should be having a slumber party right now.
Oh, that'd be fun. I got to go do the live show. Oh, no. I'm nervous. Where can people check out your videos, check out your website, all that? Because I know like MTV and UN, I don't know if there's stuff that you create for the general public.
Yeah, totally. I try to compile everything on my website. My website is myfirstandlastname.org. So franciscoramirez.org, FRANCISCO, like the city, RAMIREZ. francisconyc.org, and then on Twitter at FranciscoNYC, also Facebook, FranciscoNYC. And I put all the videos there, and certainly if people want to know where to find me from free advice, because I would love to meet any naughty monkeys in the park. I know that when I was on Dan Savage's show, the people who came to meet me after that show had the best questions, and their minds were blown. So any naughty monkey that's listening that wants to come and ask me a question, I would absolutely die. You can find out on Twitter. Usually I'll be posting there, but certainly my website. It will always say where I'm going to be and exactly what time.
Oh, great. Okay. I was wondering, like, how do we, are you like an elusive food truck where you just chase it around the city?
No, we gotta show up. We gotta let people know where we're at. Otherwise people, you know, they got questions. They need answers.
I'm totally inspired. I'm so glad to have this time with you, Francisco.
I'm so glad to be able to have you in my apartment and to be chatting about this. And, I mean, the work that you do is just, it's tremendous. And I can't, thank you enough for having me on. And we should totally do this in person next time in New York. I would love to do it.
Really? Yeah. Freaking clouds and stuff. Why has it got to rain?
There was a 14% chance of rain today, and it was pouring at 1 o'clock exactly. Boo, sad panda.
But until then, go team fun.
Go team fun!
Now leaving Nerdist.com.